The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
Very good. So this morning's talk, I'd like to start, as I often do, with a quotation, and I think from the Buddha. And it's always interesting to use these quotations in as reflections, as guides for us in our practice of the Dhamma. So this is one of my favourite ones, actually. I think many people will know this quotation. And it goes like this. Monks, it was addressed to the monks, if beings knew, as I know, the results of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given, nor would they allow the stain of meanness to obsess them and take root in their minds. Even if it were their last morsel, their last mouthful, they would not enjoy eating without having shared it, if there were someone to share it with. But monks, as beings do not know, as I know, the result of giving and sharing, they eat without having given, and the stain of meanness obsesses them and takes root in their minds. And it's quite a strong teaching. I think it sticks in the mind. And this is the whole point of a lot of the Buddha's similes, some of these examples that he gives. They stick in the mind. And you can just imagine that you eat, tucking into your dinner, and then you're getting to the last morsel and someone appears and you think, will I share it with them? So it's sort of quite a strong image in the mind. And it shows how much generosity, how much giving and sharing, how important it is. And that will be the focus of this talk. And particularly, the main focus is really the recollection of generosity. This is one of the meditations that the Buddha taught for bringing up inspiration in our minds, bringing up joy in our minds, and it kickstarts the meditation. That's the aim of it. And you'll see from the examples I give later the point of recollecting our generosity. In the West, there is a sort of conditioning, isn't there, for people to say, well, you know, you shouldn't really think about all your giving and your generosity. You'll just get very proud and insufferable. People say, oh, no, he's going on again about what he's given, what he's done. But, of course, the point is not to do that, but to develop this happiness, this joy in giving, really getting a lot out of it, reconditioning our minds so that this giving, this generosity becomes a part of it. We have so many habits in our minds, but this is a very good habit to develop, generosity. I think each and every one of us is probably knows, I know people who are very, very generous, and it can be very inspiring for us to see someone who's so generous, just gives without expecting anything back, without expecting any thanks. And that's the way, actually, we can practice generosity and get the best results. When we expect something back from another person, wow, and then we're sabotaging, that's what I say, our happiness, because often people aren't thankful, they aren't appreciative. So that's just the nature of it. But if we are happy that the generosity we have done, then that's the important thing. And of course, this talk, when I was thinking of this subject about the recollection of generosity, came to my mind, as it naturally would, that recently we've had some really incredible examples of generosity here in the Buddhist society. You know, over the Vesak period, we were raising funds for the new meditation centre. And I gather, I think it's pretty accurate, over $200,000 was raised. Now, isn't that incredible generosity? And that is a wonderful, you know, wonderful thing to see, that the Buddha's teaching is supported, the whole institution of the, you've called it an institution, I don't know if I like that, of Buddhism is based on volunteers and volunteering, giving, donating time and resources, money and all these material things. And it's all voluntary. It's all by donation. That's a wonderful thing to see. And so I'd like just to acknowledge all the people, not just briefly anyway, not go into a huge list, that contributed to the Vesak program over 5 days, I think it was. And so this is an amazing a sadhu for all those that, big sadhu for all those that participated, because that really makes it a success, doesn't it? It's all very well to organise, but if we don't have any participants, forget it. No, we can enjoy the organising. And of course, you know, the wasn't necessarily easy for all those participants, because at the fundraising dinner we had problems that were beyond the control of the BSV organisers that created a bit of chaos at the beginning. But I was very impressed to see people didn't let that dampen their enjoyment of the evening, the fun of the evening, and their involvement in the evening. So that was great. And also, the Vesak celebration on the Sunday, the 7th of May, that was challenging. I don't know if many of you were there, and some of the online viewers probably may have been there too. It was really freezing. And I was really impressed that just over 400 people came in those freezing conditions, you know, incredible. And of course we say next year it'll all be different because it'll be in the meditation retreat center. We'll be inside. So it'll be nice and hopefully warm and comfy because there is heating in the floor. So that's marvelous for all those that participated. But also mega sadhus for all the organizers from the BSV and the Kuan Ming Temple in Braybrook. That was fantastic. I saw especially the events team. I don't see Lai here today and his team, but also the fundraising team. Incredible amount of work. When we put on these events, people don't see all the work that goes on behind, but it is amazing. I always think when I see these people organizing, my goodness, and they've got a life because it's almost full-time, more than full-time work, and it's such an incredible commitment to organize these things. And also mega, mega sadhu for the volunteers that help, because without them, these events are pretty hard to run. And of course, we think of City Zen, and I think the teens group too were involved as well. So that's really part of generosity, isn't it? This giving and sharing, giving your time, sharing your time, and giving so much care and attention to organizing these events, which they do take a lot. So of course, returning to that quotation from the Buddha, just to mention, I think we don't really know the results of our giving and sharing. This is what the Buddha is saying. Most of us don't really appreciate the results from it. And the main thing I take away from it is that when we give and share, we are reducing, we are creating a habit of sharing and giving. We are creating a quality in the mind, a very good quality in the mind, because this giving and sharing is an openness. It's a sort of a sharing that connects us with to other people. It's a quality that's so positive. And it overcomes that sense of, they call it meanness or stinginess, that sense of, well, I want to hold on to it for myself, you know, think of myself first. But this generosity and giving and sharing just opens out. And I think each and every one of us has had situations where somebody has just spontaneously given and it just really touches the heart, actually. You just think, they haven't thought, well, what about me? Which is what most of us think first. Wow, is there enough? Maybe then I will give. So it overcomes, creates a new habit, a new quality in the mind. And this is what the Buddha's teachings are all about, developing these beautiful qualities, positive qualities in the mind. Often when we look for happiness in the world, we go to the five senses, what we can experience through seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching. And there is a happiness there for sure. There is. But it's not a lasting happiness. It's over before we know it. But these good qualities, all these good positive emotions, wholesome states of mind we develop, these habits in the mind, they are the thing that will really sustain us. The sense contacts, what we see, hear, smell and taste and touch, enjoyable for a short time, then forgotten. And as somebody said today, especially if it's food, then thinking of how to lose the calories afterwards. I think that's a very good point. I think they say a moment, what do they say, a moment on the lips and a month on the hips or something like that. So it's quite the case. So we're developing these habits, and these are qualities that really nourish us, that are really meaningful, that really warm the heart and the mind. And I see this, it's very, very good, especially for us who come from the West, live in the West, to see it practiced in Buddhist countries is really quite an education, actually. It's a good role model. And I think of one of the Sri Lankan women who stays at our monastery. I see her when she's offering things to the Sangha, be it to the monks or the nuns, just radiant, incredibly radiant. And I know, you know, she's getting old, so it's not so easy. You have to get up early and it's quite tiring and all this. But you can see the mind is really uplifted by this giving. And I think, for me, that is a wonderful role model, as I say, an example. And when we see that something like that, it makes us think, wow, that's a happiness that I would like to buy into, I'd like to develop, when you see that. And so that is the beauty of, especially in traditional Buddhist countries, because offering things, offering dana, is so much part of the culture. It's in the blood. And as I say, it's probably been cultivated over lifetimes. So it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And I've seen it, of course, in Sri Lanka. And of course, one of the results from our giving and sharing is that it creates karma, doesn't it? It's good karma. Good things will come from it. We will experience the results of it in this life. Sometimes we experience it immediately, actually. Person's very happy, you know, and they're delighted. And so we can get the benefits here and now and in future lives too. And we have that saying, what goes round comes round, don't we? We have that. And it also reminds me of that very powerful saying that we have in Christianity. And I think it was a very good saying that I think the Buddha could have said too, actually, give and you shall receive. And that's very true. We get back. What do we get back? We get back happiness. We get a sense of connection. We get a sense of doing something good. So it's something that can bring inspiration and happiness to our minds. And that's very important for providing harmony between people, connection between people. And also, I often say, it's giving is a way, is the best antidepressant. And it hasn't got side effects like many antidepressants. So this giving is very, very important. And one of the stories that emphasizes that I saw on the internet some years ago, It's got the names and everything in the story, actually, so it's a real story of a woman who, she was an insurance executive, and she was getting married, and they were having the prenuptial arrangements, and she didn't like the prenuptial arrangements, so she cancelled the wedding. It's very modern, isn't it? But I guess you know what you're getting into in a way. That's the positive side of it. So she cancelled the wedding, but they had already booked the reception centre. And so she had to go, and the reception centre was non-refundable. So what did she decide to do? She decided to throw a party for underprivileged, I think 50 or 60 underprivileged children and their families at this luxury reception centre. And amazing, just before Mother's Day. And she evidently, this is a good touch to it, appeared at this event in her wedding dress, the wedding dress she would have worn. Isn't that extraordinary? So she got real joy out of seeing these children enjoying this wonderful meal that would have been her guest's wedding guest meal. And so, and evidently, this is a nice, and she was seeing, watching the kids eat and painting their faces got painted and all this sort of thing. And she said, "I cannot be a princess of my wedding day," she said, "but I can give the kids a fairy tale." So that's quite nice, isn't it? So that's giving, creating happiness for herself, but also for all those kids. And even though she didn't get the wedding, she did get a lot of happiness from that event. So that's wonderful. And of course, this actually is the main point of the talk, really, is that this happiness that we get from giving, this inspiration, this joy, is a fuel for our meditation. Because even though people say, "Oh, what's Buddhism about? Oh, it's about dukkha, about suffering." It's not really. It's happiness is what's driving the path. The end of suffering, the end of difficulties, the end of unsatisfactoriness is the point of the Buddha's teachings. We don't need more suffering. We don't need more of this, these sorts of negative thoughts. So this is about happiness. In order to develop the meditation, we need this inspiration that leads to joy, that leads to the mind becoming still. It's absolutely essential. And sometimes I hear people say to me that we have interviews during meditation retreats, retreat days. We have once a month here at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, we have meditation day. And people come for interviews, and they sometimes say, "Well, the meditation's peaceful, but it's not, you know, it's sort of plateauing. It's not going anywhere." And the usual advice I would give somebody in that case is to develop more joy, more inspiration, more happiness in the mind, and more contentment really with where they are at the moment. And then the meditation doesn't go on, it goes in, goes deeper and deeper. So that's the usual advice, to develop this joy and this inspiration in our lives. And this is the point of recollecting our generosity, actually, not getting a big head, as some people might think. So, and I'd like to just mention another quote that I like, actually, just to before we move to the main focus of the talk, which is, of course, recollection of generosity. One teacher said, "If we want to get, we may not get, but if we want to give, who can stop us?" Isn't that great? That's really good. It's sort of very open-hearted, and you know, it's just giving for giving's sake, for the happiness that it gives our minds, the inspiration it gives our minds, and not expecting something back. You know, so this is a very important part of giving and sharing. But now I'd like to move on to the actual recollections. These recollections they're called anusati. And anusati, according to my Pali, is mindfulness along with. And we have Buddha nusati, mindfulness along with the Buddha, recollecting the Buddha, recollecting the Dhamma, recollecting the Sangha, recollecting our virtue and recollecting our generosity, recollecting the devas, how the devas became heavenly beings, recollecting, and then we go on to this. They're the six main recollections, and then the Buddha taught another four that are a little bit different in their quality, and that's the mindfulness of breathing and mindfulness of the body or connected with the body, and also the mindfulness of death, and the last one is the recollection of peace. So those are the ten. But the six basic ones are the main ones, the first six that I mentioned. And I've taught the Buddha Nisati, the recollection of the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, Buddha and Dhamma at the last retreat day, meditation day here in April. And then I've taught the Sangha, recollection of the Sangha at one of the Monday night, Monday night meditation I taught. And tomorrow night I will teach the recollection of generosity. So these are very important. And if people think these recollections are really just starter material, just beginner stuff, you know, just by the by, not serious meditation. There's a lovely quote from the Buddha where he mentions each one of them in the Book of the Ones, in the numerical discourses, but I'll put them together. And these 10 recollections he mentions, that when they are developed and cultivate, they lead exclusively to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nibbana. Now that's serious. It goes all the way. And these qualities, of course, disenchantment, nibbida, is a turning away from the senses, going within. It is actually a great happiness. Disenchantment sounds a bit like a negative, but in actual fact it's a great happiness because we've seen these things that I delighted in so much, very impermanent, always changing. I'm always changing. So, and dispassion is that sort of withdrawing our interest, all that desire that went in to seeking out all those things of the senses, and cessation, the ending of them, coming to peace, letting go of wanting, of expecting, of craving. And then, of course, direct knowledge is the deep insights into anicca, dukkha, into the nature of reality. And then, of course, enlightenment and nirvana. So they're pretty serious, really. So that's to bring up, and the whole point of these recollections, that sounds a bit serious, is to develop this joy and happiness. And you'll see when I read how the Buddha encourages to develop this recollection of our generosity, that this is the point, this joy and inspiration to feed our meditation and our lives. And we need this joy in our lives. A life without joy is really very flat, can lead to depression and a sense of dissatisfaction. So I'll just read a little bit of how the Buddha advises us to recollect our own generosity. So it's quite interesting. It's a bit similar to what I just read out in a way. So it's got some common themes. Furthermore, because he's just talked about the four other recollections, this is the fifth, you should recollect your own generosity. I'm so fortunate, so very fortunate, among people full of the stain of stinginess. I live at home, rid of the stain of stinginess, freely generous, open-handed, loving to let go. Sounds good, doesn't it? Committed to charity, loving to give and to share. And it continues, when a noble disciple recollects their own generosity, their mind is not full of greed, hate and delusion. And at that time, their mind is unswerving. This is meant, it's unswerving, like not distorted, straight, based on their generosity. A noble disciple whose mind is unswerving finds inspiration in the meaning and the teaching and finds joy connected with the teaching. When they are joyful, rapture arises. When the mind is full of rapture, the body becomes tranquil. When the body is tranquil, they feel bliss. And when they are blissful, the mind becomes immersed in samadhi, in one-pointedness, it comes together. You should develop this recollection of your generosity. This is the interesting bit. While walking, standing, sitting, lying down, while working, and while at home with your children. So amazing, isn't it? I hadn't seen this sutta with the end like that. That's quite interesting. That this is a recollection we can practice in everyday life, but also, obviously, as the mind gets develops this joy and this happiness, it will be a more like a sitting meditation or maybe a walking meditation as it gets stiller and stiller. And you can see that this inspiration, it mentions it in the beginning, is so important. It's like a causal sequence. Once you start the sequence, once you start the process, the rest follows. by itself. So the important one there is the beginning of a sequence is always important. So you have your generosity, and then developing this inspiration from that, an inspiration in the meaning of that, and the inspiration in the teachings, the Dhamma, and then the joy comes up connected with the teaching, and then rapture. This is definitely something experienced in meditation, this joy, this sort of rapture, the feeling of energy through the body, a really positive energy through the body that can be experienced in many, many different ways. And then, of course, the tranquility of the body. This is when the body, sometimes people can't experience the body, they can't feel the body, they may even think it's disappeared. Some people panic at that point, they're worried. The body becomes tranquil, and then from that, when the body has been let go of, when it's disappeared, happiness. And of course, this is what people, when they experience out-of-the-body experiences or near-death experiences, people, as soon as they leave the body, there's a lot of happiness because the body, especially if it's sick or it's been involved in an accident, is very painful. And to leave that body is great happiness for the mind. And then when that happiness in the mind, then the mind can come together focused on that happiness, that joy, happiness and rapture. And from there one can develop the deep understanding, the wisdom, because the mind, when the Ajahn Sajjato uses this term unswerving, it just means that the mind is no longer distorted by greed, what we want, what we don't want, hate, that's what we don't want usually, or delusion, a lot of thinking about what I need, what I want, you know, and all these things. So that sort of mind, it overcomes the hindrances to meditation. So that's a very important way the Buddha encourages us to develop our recollection of our generosity. And I'll give you I came across another teaching, another story on the internet that I think enough time to share. I thought this was pretty incredible because I think for all of us to develop this generosity is something that is somewhat of work for us, so that we develop it into a habit, something that becomes part of our character and part of our personality. But there was this story, and this has got the names again, so they sound like real people. A couple in America, and they donated half of their salary for charity, and over I don't know how many years it is, they donated over nearly $600,000 between them to charity, 50% of their income. Is that amazing? And they said, "What we need, so it makes sense to share with people." And then they said that they have two daughters, they have two children, and they said, we hope they'll grow up thinking, this is a normal part of life. It isn't. For most of us, we think, you know, as it mentions in this little article, it says, for most Americans, they give 2% of their disposable income to charity. These people are giving 50%. Incredible. Just amazing. So, and this is one of the things when we recollect generosity, the Buddha is talking about our own generosity, isn't he? But oftentimes, if we recollect somebody else's generosity, that can also be very inspiring for us, particularly if we witness it ourselves. Maybe we're the beneficiary, or maybe we're there at the time the person does something very generous and very, maybe spontaneous too. And I'd like to just finish with a story from the time of the Buddha. And this is, of course, it's in the Vinaya, the monks' rules. This is the books of regarding all the monks' and nuns' rules. And this is a story about Visakha. Do many people, have you heard of Visakha? She was the foremost female disciple of the Buddha, and a great patron of the Buddha and the Sangha. And she was also very early on, she achieved the first stage of enlightenment, stream entry. I think more or less the first time she met the Buddha. Not bad. Not bad. And one day she came to the Buddha and asked him for eight favors. And the Buddha, I think he gave quite the answer, sounded like he said to her, "Oh, Buddhas have gone beyond granting favors, Visakha. But what did you have in mind?" And of course, what she had in mind were eight gifts she could give to the Sangha, eight different types of gifts, like giving bathing cloths when it was raining, at the rainy time of the year, to the monks and the nuns, when they went bathing any time, really. So that's good. And also food for those that had just arrived in the city where she lived, Savatthi. And also for those monks who are leaving the city, because sometimes very difficult, they need to get food and then just quickly go. And also food for the sick monks and also their attendant, and also medicine. And or another thing she would offer too was this, they call it gruel. I think we might call it porridge a bit, but they call it kanda in Sri Lanka. And I think in Malaysia, it's quite a common word, congee, sort of a thin, soupy type drink, really. And so she asked those eight favors. And the Buddha listened to her and said, "Well, what's the benefit, the anisangsa of this, Visakha? What benefit do you foresee for this?" And she was very practical. She said, "Well, you know, it'd be so useful for monks and nuns, and to have these bathing cloths and food when they arrive and all this sort of thing." And then he said to her, "Well, what's the benefit for you, Visakha? What benefit do you get out of it?" And then she said to the Buddha, she said that when she hears that a monk, possibly a nun too, has passed away, and that they have achieved a stage of enlightenment, and that they had visited Savatthi, the city where she lived, she'll know that they had received one of her eight gifts. And she said when she remembered this, when she thought like this, when she recollected like this, she says, "And when I remember it, I shall be glad. And when I'm glad, I shall be joyful. When my mind is joyful, my body will be tranquil. When my body is tranquil, I shall feel happiness. And when I feel happiness, my mind will become unified or still. That will bring the development of the spiritual faculties for me." So this is the mind coming together. And the spiritual faculties, I think these are really important aspects of the path, really, how we move towards enlightenment. And they are, of course, faith or conviction, energy. Really need energy in the mind. It's energy of the mind, not energy of the body. And then mindfulness, and then stillness or samadhi, one-pointedness, mind coming together, and then wisdom, those five qualities. So she says here that this will bring the development of those five faculties. And she goes further, this is a lovely teaching, also the development of the spiritual powers, the five spiritual powers, which are those five factors, again, but much, much stronger. And then this is where she takes it even further, the enlightenment factors. The seven factors of enlightenment. These are the things that take us to enlightenment, and they are mindfulness, and it's sort of the process of meditation if you look at it. Mindfulness leading to investigation of the mind, what state the mind is in, overcoming those negative states of mind, defilements, and then energy coming up into the mind, then joy, and then tranquility, and then the mind coming together, stillness, and then equanimity. These are the seven factors of enlightenment. They're real the process of meditation. And then she said, "This is the benefit I foresee," she said to the Lord Buddha. "This is why I'm asking for these eight favors." And he said, the Buddha says, good, good Visakha, I grant these eight favours because of what the way she described the benefit. And it points to the whole practice of the whole teachings of the Buddha is about developing our minds, using our bodies, of course, bodies involved, but developing the mind in these really good qualities. It is the mind that becomes enlightened. It is the mind that becomes awakened. It is the mind that can end rebirth. The body, we can't do anything about that. The body is the body, you know, and these bodies, everyone that has a body, every being that has a body, that body will one day perish, will pass away, has to be. So this is really making the point very strongly, you know, that whatever we do in our lives, do it for developing, we need to do it for developing the mind in good qualities. Too often we can develop negative qualities. You get more angry, more impatient, more critical, more fault-finding. Our society really encourages fault-finding. And, of course, one of the biggest preoccupations, isn't it, is blaming. We see that in the news. We see it everywhere. It's as if once we blame somebody, it's the end of the problem. It isn't. It doesn't change anything. And often leads to a lot of disharmony and division if we indulge in that. So the point of this talk is, and the Buddha's teaching on the recollection of generosity, is to inspire ourselves with our own generosity, but also other people's generosity too. Because as I say, when we see someone who's really generous, it can really inspire us, but it can also be a role model for us. We can also see, well, how can I develop this quality? And in that way, it can be very helpful for our spiritual development. And the purpose of this is to bring up this inspiration. When we have inspiration and faith or conviction are very paired in a way. What we have inspiration about, if we have inspiration about teachings or from a particular teacher, it builds faith in us or conviction. We feel like, yeah, this is something worthwhile. This is something we can use. And therefore, this is the basis for bringing up this energy to practice that. Because once we have the power of inspiration, once we have this faith, then we have the energy, then we can put it into practice. We can develop mindfulness. We can use that mindfulness for developing our sila, our morality, our ethical behavior, giving, all the aspects of the path. And then we can develop from that mindfulness this stillness in the mind where the mind comes to absolute peace for a short time, very joyfully. Not dulling out, not vegging or anything like that. Really aware and sharp and joyful, really joyful. And then from that, developing the wisdom that the Buddha, the insights that the Buddha is encouraging us to develop into the nature of reality in order to free this mind from being reborn again and again and again and again forever. So this is the whole purpose of these recollections. And so I encourage each and every one of us to develop this recollection in our lives. And maybe just for a little, just to end off, shall we try just 5 minutes of recollecting generosity? Why not? I'll be doing a longer version tomorrow, so it'll probably be different too. So if we can just find a comfy position. Oh, that's good. Close the eyes. We can close the eyes and come into the present, just letting go of all that I've said, all that we will be looking forward to. Just being here with the body. Adjusting the body as we need to make it comfortable and balanced. And relaxing the body mentally too, from the top of the head to the tips of the toes, like a mental massage. And some mental massage with kindness, with care, with warmth, with relaxation. And we can just sit here in the present moment for a few moments, just being here with whatever we're experiencing. And we can bring to mind an occasion when we were generous, maybe spontaneously generous, that we remember that gave us quite a bit of energy, happiness, inspiration. Or we can remember somebody's generosity, their kindness, giving, maybe materially, maybe not materially. It could be just their kindness, care, attention. And we can remember this generosity of ourselves or someone else. And to get in contact with the feeling that can come up from that. Maybe it's a feeling of inspiration or joy, just energy, happiness. And whatever feeling came up for us, we can give that to the breath and breathe that feeling in with the in-breath and breathe it out with the out-breath. Breathing in whatever the feeling we had from our generosity or someone else's generosity, breathing it in and breathing it out. When we do that, it makes the breath more interesting, easier to stay with, and builds that steadiness of mind and builds, hopefully, that feeling that we have when we breathe that feeling in and breathe it out, be it inspiration, some joy, satisfaction. And as we are coming close to the end of the meditation, we can share this feeling with everyone here, the energy of this meditation, this short meditation, with everyone here and with all beings everywhere. And we can reflect for a few moments how we feel now. Even in this short time, has the mind changed? Moved in a different direction? Were we able to bring up Was there some inspiration or joy? What caused that to come up? And lastly, we can have the intention or aspiration to develop more of this perception of giving, of generosity. So we see the importance, the value of it, and develop more and more of it in our lives to bring up this quality, this habit of generosity, of giving in our minds. And now we can slowly come out of the meditation and open our eyes. Right. So I hope you got a little bit of an idea of how you could use it. And if you want to see, do a longer meditation tomorrow evening, there'll be more detail and we can develop this recollection of our generosity. And as I say, the generosity of others too. So it's great. That's good. So I think now it would be time for any comments, questions, or, as I often say, complaints. Oh, there, Dr. Jaya.
Thank you, Bhante, for this talk. Mm. The little personal, practical experience of practicing charity, I must say. I'm charitable as most of the people who are here. But recently there was a telephone survey about charity. I may have answered, may not be too honestly, how I keep getting telephone calls all the time asking for funds. Mm. So it has become a bit irritable. So this process brings negative energy because you get calls all the time asking for this and that and that.
Yes.
So I think it does have a negative effect on my
mind.
Answering the question. Yeah. However, I get a better feeling when I go to the milk bar and buy milk double the price that sell at Woolworths, hoping that this man will help him to serve.
Oh, right.
I go to the fruit seller, who is private guy, pay much more than what I pay for Coles and Woolworths. Yeah. And when I do that, I feel that I'm trying to help him.
Mm.
So at that time, I get much more pressure doing a little thing like that. So this has the problems of practicing charity in this very confused world.
Mm. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for that very practical example. I think everyone here can relate to it. We're probably having all these calls and the people requesting things. And also at the same time, I know even I get these text messages, you think, is it a scammer? You think, is it a scam? You know, of course, it's all these negative mind states come up. But I think a very important point you made, I think, Dr. Jaya, is that doing things in person has a much stronger effect on us. And when it's one-to-one. And I think all these donations to charity and so on, so good, good. But they don't touch the heart as much as when you do it to an actual person. You know, you're generous to an actual person. And you're really deliberately developing it as part of your spiritual practice that way too. You're giving with your own hands, which is one of the things that they mention in the suttas about foods and, you know, giving with your own hands. And at the time of the Buddha, even the kings, believe it or not, they have lots of servants, but they would give from their own hands because of that personal contact, I think, that Dr. Jaya is talking about. So giving personally has a much greater power. And also we have to, it points out too, we have to deal with the negative perceptions that develop in our minds living in the society we live in and how to deal with them so that they don't become overwhelm our mind and so that we start thinking, oh, they're all on the take, they're all, you know, demanding, they're all, you know, or scammers or whatever, you know, and they're probably running enormous admin admin groups and all this departments and whatnot. So it's very important that we build up this positive energy in the mind and don't allow these negative experiences to really become the major player in our minds, which is not for our happiness and well-being at all when we think like that. So thank you very much for that. And I think, hello, Cora. There we are. Maybe one from Cora and then to the online next.
I'm thinking that we do also have to be careful,
yes,
not to sort of rationalise ourselves out of giving because of the persistent requests made. I think, you know, it's easy to say, oh, I can't do it because everybody's asking. And I guess one way that it's probably salutary is to focus on two or three very needy organisations that actually somehow feel some feeling within us and need within us. And that way we can also resist or say quietly enough or whatever, I don't take unsolicited calls or that sort of thing. I think focusing attention is probably the best way. Thank you.
Thank you, Cora. I think it's a very good point because a lot of the charities are very worthwhile. It's not that they aren't worthwhile, but I think if you do, as you said, if you focus on them, and also when you say focus, you have a better understanding of what they're doing and how they're achieving those aims and whether they're achieving those aims. Of course, that's more difficult for us to know because usually we read what they say and they tell us, they give us the information. But if we do focus on two or three of them, then we can have a better idea of whether they're actually serving the purpose that we are donating for, and also that we subscribe very much a heartfelt feeling that, yes, I want to support this group, whether it be, you know, people to help with their eyesight or whatever, help children. It can be very different groups, but they're very worthwhile to support. I agree with you. And just to, as you say, you know, to maybe block unsolicited calls. Most people these days, if it's not in their contact list, they won't answer it. Or if they see it coming up, they quite often won't answer it. So, but I was in a car recently when somebody got a call and the driver was not pleased with them. They said, oh, I've already, you know, you've asked me this already before, no, no, no. He wasn't very happy. I thought, oh dear. But best if in that case, not to answer the call, perhaps. Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much for that. Very practical suggestion. Good. Thank you. And Sriju, yes.
Thank you, Ajahn. We've got quite a number of online questions here.
All right.
A lot of them relating to meditation. Yep. So if we don't get through them today, we'll roll them over to tomorrow's.
Actually, I wanted to give one advice about about a situation I heard in the recent talk on anxiety. We had a talk here on Thursday night from a monk about anxiety, dealing with anxiety. And somebody asked, I won't name any names, about when we have panic attacks and we're giving a presentation. Wow. I'm in the hot seat. And I thought, very good advice, and you get this is quite good advice that many people will give, is go to the body, but use something to anchor or ground us in that moment. But you have to practice it. So, you know, if you give attention to the feet touching the floor or rubbing the fingers or something in the body that can anchor one, that is very, very helpful. I know this from my own experience because when we do chanting, of course, we can forget it very easily. It can go out of the mind very easily. So, and what I do is I anchor the attention on the feet. The mindfulness is on the feet. And then the mind knows what to do. The memory knows what to do. What's getting in the way, and when we have these panic attacks, the defilements have taken over and are blocking the mind. So if we can ground ourselves in the present moment with the body, very, very useful, one part of the body. And as I say, this anchor works much, much better if we use it over and over again. And then it just grounds us in the present moment and allows that panic or that fear, that anxiety to drop away. somewhat, or reduce anyway, become manageable, and the mind to the memory to come up, and our clarity to return. So that was the suggestion that came to my mind when I heard that that question. I think it's a very good question because, you know, everybody gets in that situation from time to time. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Ajahn. This one's from Wellington, New Zealand. It says, Ajahn, when I have a good meditation, I have vivid dreams about the past things that I'd like to forget, like losing my parents and a past breakup. Mm. How do I get past this?
Right, right. And these are dreams, aren't they? They're dreams, yeah. I think one way is to do something in memory of say, for instance, in case of your parents, think offering something in memory of your parents, doing something good for your parents when they're coming up in your dreams. Oftentimes in Buddhist countries, particularly, if we have a dream about a parent or someone who's passed away, the immediate thought is, they need merit. They need some support. And so we doing something good in their name is something we can do for them. It has the beneficial effect too that we feel good because we're doing something for the relative. In the case of the past relationship, you know, and that's, it's like unfinished business, isn't it, that's coming to the mind, is to really to develop that forgiveness, particularly that metta for that person, you know, to really do it deeply in our waking experience, you know, while we're awake in our meditation, just to really forgive and to give this kindness to that person, you know. So these are some of the ways we can deal with it. What we find when there is good meditation is that the mind can access deeper levels of our awareness. Most of the time we're not aware of these things. Maybe you call it the subconscious. But they're there and they're actually operating below our awareness, but they are influencing it. So when you do experience that after these in dreams, after deep meditation, it's a sign of something we need to deal with, and to deal with it in the best possible way in our awakened experience, you know, conscious experience, daily life experience, in meditation, we can do it. So this is it's just really pointing out that there's unfinished business. And I think it's a good sign, really, even though it is daunting. And I always remember when I first started with meditation, I first started with yoga meditation, but then I did TM meditation. And you'd always hear, you know, people, I didn't get this very much, people remembering stuff that they, you know, when they started to meditate, the mind got peaceful, remembering stuff that happened a long time ago. And not always good things that had happened, but there were obviously things that needed to be addressed, really. So I think that's my advice for this person. Yeah. There we are.
Ajahn, can I just ask a follow-up on that one?
Yeah. Oh, all right. Is it?
First, Mark.
Yeah, all right.
Personal question.
Yeah, personal question, yeah. Yeah.
Well, the person mentions good meditation.
Mm.
And I remember when you started teaching me meditation when I came here very early on into the BSV, one of the things you said is you can't get this wrong.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's good.
And when we get caught up with a good meditation, we're judging good and bad and getting caught up in that duality.
Yeah.
So is that a trap?
Oh, yes, yes. I see what you mean. Yes, yes. I think it's when people use that that term good meditation, they just mean that it was very pleasant, very enjoyable, and hence they think of it as good. But I agree, it is a trap that when we classify some of our meditations as not good and some as good. But these ones where that are very enjoyable can be a springboard for the mind going deeper and deeper if we develop that path. But I agree that all our experience in meditation, all our experience in life, to a, even the unpleasant experience can be very, very useful for us to develop our wisdom, our understanding of how the mind is working too. And I think this is because until we have a difficulty in meditation, until we have a difficulty in life, we don't face it and think, well, how best to deal with this? What's a good way to deal with it? What am I experiencing? And what is a good way to react to it, not to create more of it, not to be negative towards it? So this is important. But I think you're right. You know, this labeling good and bad meditations can lead to us thinking, if they get more bad meditations, oh, I'm going to give this up. It's no good. But we can learn a lot because the Buddha's teaching, you know, what really motivates us in life. What is it? Dukkha. That's what gets us going in life, actually, when we find things are not the way we want them, which is, let's face it, that's the way of life, actually. Often it isn't. And that really motivates us. And it's the same with meditation, too. When meditation is challenging, not going, whatever it is, we look into it, we investigate it. So thank you for that. I don't know if that was quite the answer you had in mind. I should... Yeah.
Thank you, Ajahn Nisar. I know that was very generous that you gave that talk on generosity.
Yeah. Fine, Mark. Yeah.
My question is pointing towards practice, and other times as well. Mm. I always find that the element of surprise when somebody brings in a new topic takes the mm-hmm. mind to stillness. But at home, I find I get confused about what method I should be sitting down to use, because it sort of seems that when the meditation works, it always leads to the same place, but it's getting, like, the method to get it to work is, it's, some days it's sort of, I've got to sit and just sit through some challenging emotions, or some days I've got to mm. do Ajahn Brahm's body scan, or you teach the body scan as well. Yes. But I just get caught in doubt so often mm. of what to do.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if you might talk about maybe something that you think could work.
Work for that, yes. I think it's important when we start the meditation to have the mindfulness, to develop the mindfulness, come into the present moment, let go of the past and the future. And really, it can be like an invitation to the mind. What do you need now? What's appropriate now? And just leave it. You don't have to... If we're thinking about, oh, this method or that method, then it becomes confusing. But if we're open to the sort of intuition of what the mind needs at the moment... You know, often it just needs rest. But I always say when I have that in mind, I think, oh, it needs rest. The body needs rest. The mind needs rest. But with awareness, it's always good to frame it with awareness, so that the mind has the focus that, yeah, relaxing, resting, but with mindfulness. So it's very important. So just be open to what the mind needs at this particular time, because it'll be different. The mind's not always the same, and if we use the same method every time, it won't work. We've got to be more intuitive, because the mind is moving on all the time. You see it during the day, so let alone, you know, each time we sit down to meditate. It's going to be different. And so it may need, you know, just a lot of rest. It may need just something like reflecting on generosity, recollecting our generosity, some kickstarter, get a bit of energy, a bit of joy in the mind. Or it could be things like reflecting on death, you know, that can be quite very, very useful too. And the preciousness of life and the opportunity of life when we're feeling unmotivated, but not to depress ourselves, but to bring up energy. So thank you for that question. And I'd like to just finish off now, and this is just a to dedicate this talk, first of all, to a friend whose birthday is today. I think he's 70, actually, a friend in Sydney, and I've known him for 50 years. So I thought I'd dedicate it to him. Phil Martin in Sydney, and I know him from Perth. But also I had a request from Sri Lanka, from Mr. Kumar Punchihava, who I know have known for many years, and he's a very generous supporter of the Sangha, both monks and nuns, very interestingly. And he started a place in Colombo for monks and nuns coming from the countryside, from outside Colombo, who need temporary accommodation, and he set up this place with his wife as well. And it's called the Arana Gimanhala in Batramula. So it's I've stayed there. It's a great place. I enjoy it. It's a bit unusual in a way. It's in an apartment building. It's unusual, isn't it? It's an apartment in an apartment building. And the people in the building are great. Some of them love offering the breakfast dana, and then we go on the alms round into the neighbourhood. But the neighbours love offering food too, because they don't get much opportunity for when monks or nuns go on alms round. So it's a great place. But he asked me if we could dedicate merit to his late wife, Mrs. Dumdara. We knew her as Dummy. Dummy, not like that. Not the English sounds. Dummy. And Punchihava. And she would have been her birthday today, her 63rd birthday, but she passed away in 2019. And on the 27th of June, next month, should be her fourth death anniversary. And he also asked if we could remember his mother too. His he says, beloved mother, Mrs. Leslyn Piacele Silva, who passed away on the 24th of May, 24 years ago. So there we are, 1999. So those people. And when we do the chanting over before the meal, we'll do the dedication of merit for those people, thinking of those people in mind. All right. Maybe I can do it just shortly here. Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So now I'd like to invite everyone, I'm sure Adrian would say the same, to come over for the shared meal today. We have a shared meal, and if you have questions after the meal, you're welcome to speak to myself after the meal. All right. Now, for those who'd like to, we can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha and finish off for this Sunday morning.